in 2007. For comparison, around 4.4 million were stuck in the system when the pandemic reached the United Kingdom. The latest joint strike between both groups of medical staff follows their first combined industrial action in September, which led to almost 130,000 NHS inpatient and outpatient appointments being rescheduled. Responding to the data, Matthew Taylor, the chief executive of the NHS Confederation, said, "As the total number of operations and appointments cancelled due to industrial action reaches 1.2 million, which in actuality may be more than twice as high due to trusts not booking activity in the first place, health leaders could be forgiven for wondering at what point will that number become unacceptable enough for the British Medical Association and government to bring an end to this." Matthew Taylor, the chief executive of NHS Confederation, added, "How many more patients must experience a cancellation? How many must see their operation postponed more than once?" He asked, "How much higher than £1.3 billion must the bill for this get? And how many more cancer patients must be left waiting until this is brought to a close?" He added, "NHS leaders repeatedly do all they can to mitigate the impact of strikes, but it is an increasingly difficult task and a frustrating battle." He added, "Backlogs are not the fault of those striking, but with the waiting list standing at 7.7 million, unless this dispute is resolved ahead of the truly difficult winter months, there is next to zero chance of the Prime Minister's pledge to bring the list down being met." He said, "We've seen the British Medical Association make tentative moves towards ending this dangerous deadlock via an olive branch proposing talks to end the dispute with consultants mediated by ACAS." He added, "We'd strongly encourage the government to grab it with both hands. While doing so might not be a solution in and of itself, it would offer some hope to an increasingly demoralised workforce and exasperated patients who just want to see the National Health Service working as it should." The website of Hurt Head Topics has also covered this story and tells us more. Chief Executive of NHS Providers Sir Julian Hartley said, "122,441 appointments, operations and procedures were delayed due to industrial action across British hospitals, ambulance, mental health and community services in recent days alone. But the effects of this disruption will be felt for weeks and months to come." Sir Julian Hartley added, "This failure to resolve strikes is piling the pressure on the National Health Service and is having a huge impact on staff morale, resilience and teamwork." Sir Julian Hartley said staff who want to focus their efforts and attention on tackling record-high waiting lists and preparing for winter are instead spending valuable time rescheduling large numbers of appointments. He added, "We need this dispute to be resolved, but trust leaders are growing increasingly exasperated by the deadlock. Strikes may not be allowed to become the status quo." He said, "It is vital that the government and trade unions sit down and talk so that everyone's focus can get back to the real priority, providing safe, high quality and timely care for patients." It comes as National Health Service papers released on Thursday, 5th of October, prior to its fifth board meeting of the year, confirmed industrial action has cost £1.1 billion. Under its financial performance update, Julian Kelly, the Health Service's chief financial officer, said ongoing industrial action was driving additional expenditure as well as impacting on efficiency delivery. Julian Kelly added, "Without further support for costs of industrial action, there is significant risk that many systems will overspend this year." He said, To the end of July, we have estimated a cost impact of £550 million and described lost activity valued at a further £550 million. Before the recent walkouts, junior doctors had staged 22 days of strike action, with consultants taking to the picket lines on six separate days. Radiographers previously took 48-hour strike action from 25th to 27th of July. In July, the government gave junior doctors a pay rise worth between 8.1% and 10.3%. Consultants were handed an extra 6% as part of the deal, recommended by the review body on doctors and dentists' remunerations. But the British Medical Association says doctors have seen their pay erode by up to 35% over the last 15 years. As a result, junior doctors have called for a full restoration of pay, while consultants have set their demand at 11%. In July, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said Number 10's 2023-2024 pay offer to junior doctors and consultants was the government's final offer. The British Medical Association, however, immediately rejected the rise, vowing to crack on with strike action. Speaking recently, Vivek Trivedi, co-chair of the British Medical Association's Junior Doctors Committee, said he finds it surprising that the British government is still unwilling to negotiate. Vivek Trivedi said, "Ultimately, we know what the effects of year-on-year pay cuts are to our workforce's morale, retention, and now actually even recruitment. If the government wants to have any sort of workforce in the future to be able to treat patients in a timely manner, then we need to do something to fix that. It's just so surprising that they're still unwilling to talk about how we can end this dispute." The British Medical Association has urged Secretary of State for Health and Social Care Steve Barclay to make a credible offer to the union to get them round the negotiating table. But Steve Barclay has accused the union of using militant tactics and refusing to drop his unrealistic 35% pay demand. The Health Secretary has not met the British Medical Association in months.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Rocket fire from Gaza. Palestinian fighters carrying out an unprecedented offensive with thousands of rockets. Sirens sounding across Israel, including Tel Aviv and outlets. Israel is being attacked ferociously. This was by far the biggest operation by resistance groups against Israel in decades. We decided to put an end to all the crimes of the occupation. Their time for rampaging without being held accountable is over. We announced Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, and we fired in the first strike of 20 minutes more than 5,000 rockets. That was the announcement by the Ezzedin Al-Qassam Brigades, the military wing of the Hamas resistance group. Armed clashes along the separation fence with Israel near the southern town of Khan Yunis were reported to take place. Fighters seen here breaking through the fence. The mood, however, was different. The head of Hamas's political bureau is seen celebrating the operation, carried out not only by Hamas fighters, but by all the resistance fighters in the Gaza Strip. Such was the case at the Jenin refugee camp. Israel has declared a state of war alert, striking back, setting the stage for a new heavy war. Hamas fighters are seen inside an Israeli military camp, which shows the shock surprise of Israeli army. Here, Hamas fighters are seen with a captured Israeli military vehicle. This is a large operation including all Palestinian resistance groups in the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank, namely Hamas, PFLP, the Ezzedine Al-Qassam Brigades, and the Islamic Jihad movement. In the occupied West Bank, the Lion's Den is also active. Israeli towns are on fire, like Rehovot in southern Israel, and Ashkelon seen burning after resistance rockets landed there. So dire the situation, Israelis were forced to hide in trash bins. Meanwhile, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are looking for cover, while sounding defiant when it comes to Israeli regime forces. Israel is finding itself on shaky grounds, even though it has mobilized reservists. There are shortages since reservists, along with pilots, have refused to take orders due to its so-called judicial reforms, which is why this announcement by Netanyahu may fall on deaf ears. Our enemy will pay a price, the type of which it has never known. That was a statement from Netanyahu. The surprise offensive that Palestinian fighters executed against the Israeli regime is a natural outcome of what Israel has done with Palestinians over the decades. Hezbollah summed it up best. This was a decisive response to Israel's continued occupation. However, Hezbollah also added this to its statement. This is a message to those seeking normalization with Israel. A clear reference to Saudi Arabia, which is said to be in talks with Israel for, quote, normalization. Ever since this extreme cabinet came into power, it has violated Palestinians on a daily basis. Not that previous Israeli officials did not do that, but this cabinet has done it at warp speed, which puts into question why Saudi Arabia would be interested in pursuing a, quote, normalization. Any normalization with Israel would be a stab in the back of Palestinians. Just the other day, Israel announced that it will legitimize the killing of Palestinian citizens in new open fire rules. It said the new measure seeks to allow officers to use live fire against Palestinian protesters. Al-Aqsa violations, Israeli incursions, injuring and killing Palestinians. All of this in the face of the silence by the international community. How much longer could Palestinians endure this?
As the war drags on in Ukraine, signs are emerging that do not bode well for the U.S.-led coalition against Russia. Just days ago, the Slovak Social Democracy Party, which is a pro-Russia party, won the country's parliamentary elections. The leftist Smeristy Party, led by former Premier Robert Fico, has not secured enough votes to form a government and needs to form a coalition with other parties. But the victory has been interpreted as a sign of growing war fatigue in Europe. The party's leader has said that no more weapons would go to Ukraine. He has also questioned the logic of the EU's Russia sanctions and even accused NATO of causing the war.
I believe that on the one hand, yes, we should expect certain, let's say, uncomfortable relationship between Brussels and Slovakia. But then on the other hand, I also think that the relationship will also be rather pragmatic. However, the danger is real when it comes to Slovakia's declining support to Ukraine. And this will also have its impact to weaken the EU's unity when it comes to its support for Ukraine.
Just weeks ago, Poland, a staunch ally of Ukraine, announced that it would no longer supply weapons to its neighbor amid a diplomatic dispute over Kiev's grain exports. Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki has said that Poland's focus was instead on defending itself with more modern weapons. The country's president later tried to modify this stance, but the dispute is seen as a rift among members of the anti-Moscow alliance. Poland has supplied hundreds of Soviet-era tanks and 14 MiG-29 fighter jets to Ukraine and served as a major transit hub for weapons from other Western nations. These developments have stirred talk of a global shift in sentiment towards supporting Ukraine as the war grinds on, more than a year and a half after it began.
It is full of Ukrainians here. This is what I seriously do not like. They get benefits, energy costs went up, everything went up. So basically, they are getting benefits, and we, our citizens, we pay.
The money spent on the war in Ukraine has unnerved many citizens in European countries. Days ago, hundreds of people staged rallies in different German cities to vent their anger at Berlin's growing support for Ukraine. Many protesters carried banners and placards advocating for peace in Ukraine while expressing opposition to government policies, including the remilitarization of Germany. Demonstrators said Germany's decision to send more weaponry to Ukraine risks escalation of the conflict with Russia. Some protesters demanded that Germany pull out from the NATO alliance. Some said the United States is benefiting from Germany's intervention in the Russia-Ukraine war. Germany is among Western countries that have provided Ukraine with a wide range of weapons since the war erupted in February 2022.
I'm mainly concerned with crisis intervention and resolving this armed conflict on the one hand. On the other hand, of course, there are trends in the militarization of Germany. After all, from a purely political point of view, Germany is right in the middle, and America is shamelessly taking advantage of that too, using citizens through media policy to perhaps ultimately use them for their own goals, and Ukrainian citizens were also exploited.
The German economy has suffered due to crisis in Ukraine. It tipped into a recession at the start of the year and stagnated in the second quarter. High inflation, industrial slowdown, and reduction in global demand for manufactured goods have all been weighing on the German economy. And earlier in October, dozens of anti-war activists in New York City said that the interest of NATO depends on the perpetuation of imperial capital and extraction of wealth from the dispossessed.
Unification of peace forces in the United States, recognizing that it's the United States and NATO who are the to blame and the fundamental cause of the conflict in Ukraine, and that if we can force the U.S. government to stop sending money and weapons to Ukraine, the war will end the very next day.
A poll conducted in August said most Americans oppose Congress authorizing additional funding. Overall, 55% say the U.S. Congress should not authorize additional funding to support Ukraine versus 45% who say Congress should authorize such funding. And 51% say that the U.S. has already done enough to help Ukraine. The removal of Kevin McCarthy as Speaker of the House of Representatives has added to the uncertainty around aid for Ukraine.
Kevin McCarthy has been ousted as Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives in a brutal, historic rebellion by far-right Republicans. The rebellious GOP lawmakers, furious at his cooperation with Democrats, have accused him of a string of broken promises. This is the first ouster of a Speaker in the House's 234-year history.
On this vote, the yeas are 216, the nays are 210. The resolution is adopted. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table. The office of Speaker of the House of the United States House of Representatives is hereby declared vacant.
I mean, it's a sign, I think, if history is any guide at all to this, it's a sign of a party in disintegration. I mean, that's what's happening. and it's melting down, and that's pretty clear. That's the older history. The more recent history, I think, is that what we're seeing today is the latest installment in the, you know, ever continuing coup d'etat by Donald Trump. I mean, that's what we're seeing.
The vote to oust McCarthy marks a major escalation in tensions for a House GOP conference that has been mired in infighting, and it comes just days after McCarthy successfully engineered a last-minute bipartisan effort to avert a government shutdown.
That I think probably the next step would be a shutdown, which is really what they're probably aiming for. They wanted to get McCarthy out of there in part because he stood in the way of that. Bunch of reasons, but that's part of it. And it's the politics of chaos.
The effort to oust the speaker was led by GOP Republican Matt Gaetz. There is also a significant amount of distrust and anger from House Democrats towards McCarthy over his actions as speaker and the House GOP agenda. The rebellious lawmakers accused McCarthy of a flip-flop, saying he had promised an end to hastily prepared stopgap legislation hammered out with the support of the opposition and a return to budgeting through the committee process. Some Republican leaders condemned McCarthy's removal, with former vice president and current presidential candidate Mike Pence suggesting it would undermine the GOP in the eyes of voters. There is no clear successor to oversee the House Republican majority. Congress has just over 40 days to agree on a deal to avoid another potential government shutdown.
But there is a certain nihilistic quality to what they're doing. However, there is also, you know, genius in the madness, because the madness is about creating as much chaos as possible. And then, you know, then the Trump people will step in.
Speaker Kevin McCarthy's ouster could signal a shift in the U.S. House of Representatives on aid to Ukraine, with some of his possible successors staunchly opposed to assisting Kiev. Republic opponents of the aid view it as excessive spending and a misplaced U.S. policy priority.
I rise to put the leadership of the House, the Senate, and the President of the United States on notice. I will not consent to any expedited passage of any spending bill that provides any more American aid to Ukraine. It's as if no one has noticed that we have no extra money to send to Ukraine. Our deficit this year will exceed $1.5 trillion. Borrowing money from China to send it to Ukraine makes no sense. It's not as if we have some sort of rainy day fund sitting around, trillions of dollars in a pot of money, and we're just going to send that to Ukraine. We're going to borrow it. When we borrow it and create new money to pay for that borrowing, we create the inflation that is plaguing our economy.
McCarthy earlier this week denied accusations by Gaetz that he had cut a secret deal with Biden to allow the House to vote on Ukraine aid. McCarthy said then he wanted more information from the Biden administration. President Joe Biden asked Congress in July to approve another $24 billion related to Ukraine. Although the compromise struck in Congress dropped new fundings for Ukraine amid opposition from hardline Republicans, it remains unclear what might happen next. Biden and his Democratic Party say the U.S. has a duty to help Ukraine.
And why it's critically important for the United States and our allies that we keep our commitment. We can support Ukraine in the next tranche that we need, and there is another means by which we may be able to find funding for that, but I'm not going to get into that now.
However, the issue has become so politicized in Washington that the fate of vital military aid is now in jeopardy. The U.S. has approved four rounds of aid to Ukraine, totaling about $113 billion, with some of that money going towards replenishment of U.S. military equipment that was sent to the front lines.
Since the beginning of Russia's war in Ukraine, the American taxpayers provided Ukraine with $113 billion. Over the 583 days of war, between February 24, 2022 and the end of the month, that averages $6.8 billion per month, or $223 million per day. There's a lot of things that we need to fix in our country before we borrow money to try to perpetuate a war in another country.
There are also widespread concerns over corruption in Ukraine. The U.S. is increasingly urging Ukraine to do more to combat corruption. This is while Ukraine considers the direct budget support it gets from the U.S. and other foreign allies to be vital to keeping its economy afloat.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Limelight.
European household bills have soared since Western countries largely abandoned Russian oil, natural gas, and coal supplies. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RT, energy prices across the EU have been surging, raising the prospect of higher household bills as the bloc prepares for another winter with drastically reduced Russian natural gas supplies. The cost of electricity in Italy jumped nearly 30% in the week from August 21st to August 27th, reaching 138 euros per megawatt hour. According to estimates by research group Nomisma Energia, starting from October 1st, Italian families could face a 7% to 10% hike in their electricity bills. It cited rising gas prices as the major cause, as Italy is one of the most natural gas-dependent countries in the EU. The president of Nomisma Energia, David Tabarelli, warned recently that if prices remain at these levels, it is inevitable that they will be reflected in an increase in future electricity bills. According to Tabarelli, as quoted by Italy 24 Press News, projections for next winter indicate international prices are 40% higher than current ones, and if they materialize, gas tariffs for the winter could be 20% higher than current levels. Elsewhere in the EU, energy costs have also continued to climb, with the average wholesale electricity price in Estonia rocketing by 93% to 153.39 euros per megawatt hour in the last week. Prices in both Latvia and Lithuania soared 23% to 142.58 euros per megawatt hour. Electricity prices in the EU surged last year following the bloc's decision to heavily restrict Russian oil and gas and fully ban coal supplies as part of its sanctions policy. France, which was once a net power exporter to the EU, had to rely heavily on electricity imports from neighboring countries last winter. Many of its nuclear power plants, which accounted for 70% of the country's electricity output, have been offline for maintenance. According to Bloomberg, France has extended permission for power-generating companies to burn more coal in the coming months in order to prevent shortages this winter. The move comes as the output of utility major Électricité de France, EDF, which provides over half of France's electricity, will reportedly remain below historical levels this winter due to problems with its fleet of nuclear reactors affected by a stress corrosion, the outlet said. Tension on the power system is currently lower than at the same period of last year, the French Ecological Transition Ministry said, referring to the prospects of wind and solar output and a drop in energy consumption. However, one must take all measures to ensure security of energy supply for the French in any event, it added, noting the possibility that the conflict in Ukraine may not be over by winter or that the winter itself will be very tough. At the same time, the French government has tightened requirements for the operation of the country's two remaining coal-fired power plants. Electricity producers will only be allowed to operate for up to 1,800 hours in the coming winter, or about 11 weeks, down from 2,500 hours last winter, according to the French ministry. Under a government decree, coal-powered plants will have to pay more per ton of carbon dioxide released. Power prices in the EU soared last year following the bloc's decision to abandon Russian energy as part of its sanctions policy. France, which was once a power exporter to the EU, had to rely heavily on electricity imports from neighboring countries last winter. Many of its nuclear power plants, which accounted for 70% of the country's electricity output, have been offline for maintenance. Also, according to the news outlet Bild, Germany has had to ramp up electricity imports in the first 6 months of the year after the government decided to shut down the country's last remaining nuclear power plants in favor of renewable energy sources. From January 1st to June 12th, the EU's largest economy relied on power supplies from neighboring countries, the outlet said, citing the cabinet's response to a parliamentary inquiry. Germany can no longer meet its demand with domestically generated power, the report stated, due to a green energy policy disaster that saw nuclear plants closed in favor of renewables. Berlin now relies on imports of electricity produced at French atomic facilities and on supplies generated at local plants in the Czech Republic. Energy expert Andre Tess told TASS news agency, according to publicly available data, Germany has turned from an exporter of electricity into an importer. This is most likely due to the abandonment of nuclear power plants. Germany industry executives earlier sounded the alarm over looming electricity shortages that could endanger the competitiveness of Germany as an industrial hub. The head of energy firm RWE, Markus Kreber, warned last month, as an industrial location, Germany has a serious problem. We don't have as much energy available as we need. This gap leads to high prices and thus to justified concerns about competitiveness, he said, adding, we are seeing the first signs of deindustrialization. According to RT, Germany pledged to abandon nuclear power after Japan's 2011 Fukushima catastrophe. In April, Berlin shut down its last three nuclear power stations, ending a six-decade nuclear program in favor of fully renewable electricity generation by 2035. The initial plan was to use more Russian gas during the transition period via the Nord Stream pipelines, which were built to deliver cheap fuel from Russia. Prior to the conflict in Eastern Europe, Germany met up to 40% of its demand with gas from the sanctioned country. However, the sabotage of the natural gas pipelines and Western penalties imposed on Moscow prompted Berlin to search for alternative supplies. Last year, Berlin replaced some of its Russian gas with imports of LNG from the West Asia region and the U.S. But economists have warned that it would take years for Germany to fully substitute Russian supplies with other sources of energy.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this program, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a part of a speech delivered by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the veterans from the Sacred Defense and the Resistance Field. This meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on September 2023, inaugurating Sacred Defense Week. What I would like to say is that the event of the Sacred Defense is a prominent, important period in our country's history. The greatness of this event must be recognized. Of course, I obviously do not intend to carry out this goal in this meeting. It is impossible. It is a large, extensive, comprehensive task. Nevertheless, I would like to speak about some aspects of it. We want the greatness of this event to be known. The greatness of this event can be looked at from several angles and perspectives. One of its angles concerns what was being defended, because we are talking about a sacred defense. So what were we defending? That's the first issue. If we look at it from this angle, an important part of the greatness of this event will become apparent. Another angle is who was the defense confronting? Who was it that had attacked us that necessitated a defense? This is another angle which I think is important. The third perspective or angle is who were the defenders? This is also a novel and important thing that I will mention two or three sentences about.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The fourth angle is what were the results and achievements of this defense. Now I have mentioned these four aspects, but of course it can be viewed from other angles as well. So we need to discuss this, we need to think, study and ask ourselves what was being defended. Second, who was the defense confronting? Third, who was doing that defending? Fourth, what was the result of this defense? I believe that each one of these issues is very important. We need to think and study each of these issues. This is very important. As to what was being defended, the Islamic Revolution, the Islamic Republic, which was the product of defending the Islamic Revolution, and the country's territorial integrity were being defended. These were the three important things that were being defended. The other side had attacked these three things. Of course, the target of the main important part of the front of the enemy, which I will explain later in the second part of my speech, was not the issue of territorial integrity. That was Saddam's goal.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن.
Muslims major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
In the limelight.
Russian President Vladimir Putin predicts gradual collapse of dollar-based financial system. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RT, Russian President Vladimir Putin, on the plenary session of the Vladi Discussion Club, said the dollar-based global financial system is not balanced as it does not meet the interest of all countries. According to Putin, the dominance of the American currency has to end, which is already happening, while the U.S. authorities are shooting themselves in the foot. He said the Bretton Woods system, it was once created on the basis of the dollar, but all this is gradually collapsing. The Russian leader pointed out, currency is a derivative of the power of the country's economy, which issues this currency. Putin emphasized, in addition, the share of the U.S. economy in global GDP is declining, as evidenced by statistical data. According to the Russian president, Washington is used to printing money in order to cover its budget deficit and will continue the policy as long as needed. Putin predicted, they will print more. They printed, well, more than $9 trillion during the COVID and post-COVID period. Therefore, it cost them nothing to print something else and scatter it all over the world, thus increasing food inflation. They will do it for sure. Meanwhile, Press TV wrote, Iraq will ban cash withdrawals and transactions in U.S. dollars as of January 1, 2024, in the latest push to curb the misuse of its hard currency reserves in financial crimes. A top Iraqi central bank official has recently said, the move aims to stamp out the illicit use of some 50% of the $10 billion that Iraq imports in cash from the New York Federal Reserve each year. Mazen Ahmad, Director General of Investment and Remittances at the Iraqi Central Bank, told Reuters. It's also part of a broader push to de-dollarize an economy that has seen the greenback preferred over local notes by a population wary of recurring wars and crises following the 2003 U.S. invasion. People who deposit dollars into banks before the end of 2023 will continue to be able to withdraw funds in dollars in 2024, Ahmad has said, but dollars deposited in 2024 could only be withdrawn in local currency at the official rate of 1,320. The parallel market rate of the Iraqi dinar sat at 1,560, recently roughly 15% below the official rate. Ahmad said, you want to transfer. You want a card in dollars? Here you go. You can use the card inside Iraq at the official rate. Or if you want to withdraw cash, you can at the official rate in dinars. But don't talk to me about cash dollars anymore. A central bank statement later said the ban on cash dollar withdrawals would only apply to accounts receiving transfers from abroad. Iraq has already set up a platform to regulate wire transfers that make up the bulk of its dollar demand and that used to be a hotbed of fake receipts and fraudulent transactions. Set up in concert with authorities in the U.S., where Iraq's $120 billion in reserves from oil sales are held, that system was not nearly airtight, Ahmad said, proving dollars at the official rate to those engaged in legitimate trade such as imports of food and consumer goods. But the cash withdrawals have continued to be misused, he said, including by would-be travelers provided with a state quota of $3,000 who have found ways to game the system. Iraq is heavily reliant on Washington's goodwill to ensure oil revenues and finances do not face U.S. censure. Press TV added, many local banks have already been limiting dollar cash withdrawals in the past months, compounding a shortage that has been the parallel market exchange rate continue to rise. Ahmad said some banks were low on dollars because many people were trying to withdraw dollars at once amid a feeling of unease over the financial system, while some banks also had shortages because they provided dollar-denominated loans that were then paid back in dinars. The CBI had also limited the amount of dollars it was providing as part of an agreement with the Fed to limit cash and shift towards e-payment, he said. He denied reports of a stoppage in cash shipments to Iraq from the Fed, noting the latest regular shipment had arrived recently. Ahmad said the CBI expected the dinar could lose more value as the new measures went into force, but said it was an acceptable side effect of formalizing the financial system, and the CBI was providing dollars at the official rate for all legitimate purposes. He said the cost we are carrying today is nothing compared to this goal, describing the parallel market rate as a rate used mostly for illegitimate transactions. He said, we don't have a problem with the parallel exchange rate hitting 1,700. He added, as long as all transparent and legal financing operations happen via us at the official rate, the rest does not matter. The central bank statement later quoted Ahmad as saying that the central bank was drawing and taking steps that would reduce the parallel market exchange rate, and there was no indication that the market rate would hit 1,700. Some signs of frustration with dollar shortages have already begun to emerge. Recently, a video circulated on social media showing a depositor at a Baghdad bank threatening to burn it down if he did not receive his deposit in cash dollars, a scene reminiscent of steps depositors have taken amid Lebanon's banking crisis. The man says, I swear I will burn it down. I swear I will enter the safe and take my money.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Our blood and with our lives, we support you, O Al-Aqsa. This was the chant that rang high in the streets of the Yemeni capital, where tens of thousands of Yemenis came out to express solidarity for the latest Palestinian offensive against Israel.
Today, Sana'a came out to say we are with Operation Al-Aqsa Blood, which will wash away all the oppressors and all of those normalizing ties and selling out Palestine. Today, Sana'a is letting the Palestinians know that we are with you and that this operation will lead to the end of all oppressors worldwide.
Ansarullah officials at the rally congratulated what they called an unprecedented Palestinian attack that exposed just how weak the Israeli regime is. Muhammad Ali Al-Houthi, a prominent Ansarullah official, believes power is the only initiative Israel will respect.
The only initiative respected by the illegal occupiers is the kind of power that was demonstrated by the great fighters from the Palestinian resistance groups. Their heroic and iconic actions will be recorded in the books of history and will never be forgotten by the enemy and will never be forgotten by the Muslim world.
It is an Islamic obligation to stand with the Palestinians and to stand against our enemies and to stand against America and Israel. The conflict for us is a matter of central and fundamental Islamic duties. By the will of Allah, victory is near.
The demonstration also condemned some of the Arab regimes who have normalized ties with Israel, declaring those who engage in such political efforts as traitors to Islam. Following the surprise offensive against Israel, senior Hamas military commander has called on all Islamic resistance movements in the region, including Lebanon's Hezbollah and Yemen's Ansar Allah movement, to unite efforts to liberate Palestine today, not tomorrow. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
The 5th International and 13th National Iranian Biotechnology Congress has kicked off in the capital, Tehran. The inauguration ceremony of this scientific event was held at the International Conference Center of Shahid Beheshti University. The Congress is the most important gathering of Iranian biotechnology specialists and will run until October 10th.
This conference is aimed at recognizing scientific and technological achievements in the fields of genetic engineering and biotechnology. Hundreds of scientists, researchers, and even students have participated in this event. Nearly 600 articles were presented to the conference.
The Congress aims to provide an innovative and comprehensive overview of the latest developments in different fields of biotechnology, such as pharmaceuticals and nanotechnology.
Regarding the Congress, we have been working so hard to organize a conference on mostly scientific and in entrepreneurship. What I can say about the Iranian biotechnology is that the progress has been immense in the past 20 years. We have had a few laws in Iranian parliament that supporting the startups and the high technologies, including the biotechnology, especially in medicine, pharmaceuticals. Iranian progress have been immense. We are exporting our pharmaceuticals to many countries, but the progress has not been limited on pharmaceuticals, on kits, on several different aspects.
Biotech products account for nearly one-tenth of Iranian knowledge-based companies' income, as well as 60% of their exports. Currently, about 800 knowledge-based firms are operating in the field of biotechnology in Iran. They have managed to fulfill the country's domestic needs by manufacturing homegrown products and decrease the country's foreign exchange spending.
We are a knowledge-based company that has managed to produce thermocycler machines in Iran for the first time. This machine is used in the quantification of DNA and RNA. This apparatus is used in many Iranian laboratories. It can compete with the foreign models as it is very accurate and has a reasonable price.
We are a knowledge-based company active in the field of diagnostic and extraction kits production. We cooperate with many Iranian companies, labs, and research institutions. In the long term, we want to export our products to the neighboring countries.
Around 30 types of biotech medicines are produced in Iran in addition to kits, vaccines, and blood products. Also, 80% of biotechnology pharmaceutical items are domestically produced. Iran is an advanced and developed country in biotechnology. It's ranked first in the West Asia and 12th in the world. And by supporting knowledge-based companies and academics, the country seeks to improve its global position in this field. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Hi.
Hundreds of people have taken to the streets of the Pakistani capital Islamabad to express their support for Palestinian people and to condemn the Israeli regime's atrocities against Palestinians. Chanting slogans against the US and Israel, the demonstrators called on the Western nations to stop supporting the Tel Aviv regime and respect the rights of Palestinians.
West has shown their hypocrisy, their dual standards. They again stood up for Israelis. They raised their voice like America and other countries that what has been done by Hamas, that was a brutality. But what has taken place in right now in residential area of Gaza, they are not raising the voice of the Gazans. They are not raising the voice of innocent Palestinians, where many dozens of innocent children and women are killed.
The demonstrators also urged the Muslim world to unite in order to put an end to attacks on Muslims.